Wednesday, December 9th, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and in fact, this is our one-year anniversary podcast. We have released a new podcast every Wednesday for one solid year. We bring you a different outlook on the world of sports than you get anywhere else. We've put out a show every single week now for a year. Our first show was last year, December 10th. So this is our one-year anniversary here at the Daily Dose. We are proud of that. You know, we give you a different outlook on the world of sports. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can go over to iTunes. You can download it there. You can subscribe to it there. You can pretty much find the podcast just about anywhere podcasts are hosted. If you would like to head over to our website, you can listen to it there. Our website is dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Put up a few new articles every single week. Go over and check those out, and you can listen to the podcast there as well. If you'd like to contact the show, if you'd like to email us, the email address is dailydosesports@gmail.com. If you've got a question, you've got a comment, you need some advice, whatever you might need, we can take care of you there. And if you'd like to find us over on Twitter or Facebook, Twitter handle is Daily Dose Sports. You can find us there. Same thing for Facebook. Go check out the website. I would encourage you to do so. Put up a new article there yesterday about Johnny Football and the Cleveland Browns. Put up new stuff every single week. You might want to check that out. Today on the show, on our one-year anniversary, John from the Inland Empire will be stopping by. We are going to talk a little bit about the college football playoff, talk a little bit about the Heisman candidates that were announced, and I want to talk a little bit about the NFL playoff scenarios that are shaping up in football. I want to talk to John about a few of those. Plus, as usual, we do have our Daily Dose Top 5, a very popular segment here on the show. Make sure you stick around for that, because if I'm going to get comments on anything, I'm always going to hear on the Daily Dose Top 5. Couple things in breaking news that I want to get to very quickly. For the first time in 2 years, the Michigan State Spartans are the number one college basketball team in the country. They were named the number one team in the AP Top 25 this week. Michigan State got off to a very good 9-0 start. And, you know, they have a game on Saturday against Florida. Florida, not the team that they have been in the past under Billy Donovan, but still will be a decent test. In our Daily Dose college basketball preview, I told you I thought Michigan State was the best team in the country. I think come March and April, they will be contending for the title. And apparently, the AP poll agrees with me. Kansas is sitting at number 2. They do have the one loss. North Carolina is sitting at number 3. Iowa State has climbed up to 4, and Kentucky is sitting at 5. College basketball starting to heat up a little bit. Keep an eye on the world of college hoops. Did you see this? You might have missed this, but the Philadelphia 76ers are trying to get their franchise on track. We know what they've done. We know the disaster and the garbage that franchise has been. Philadelphia 76ers owner Josh Harris asked Jerry Colangelo to fix and save the Sixers as part of the front office, and Jerry Colangelo is joining the Philadelphia 76ers. You'll remember, Colangelo rebuilt the Phoenix Suns. He was chairman of USA Basketball. And now, it's hard for me to sit here and say Colangelo is the guy to fix the 76ers because they are a mess. They are a huge mess. They keep getting the number one pick. They're tanking for their fans year after year after year. They keep doing nothing with the pick. They don't have anything really to show for it. They have a bunch of young kids that have no idea what they're doing. But they did bring Colangelo in. He has signed to do this. He'll be working in the front office. And I think they're going to try to rebuild the front end of the 76ers. The 76ers are a franchise that should be great. This is a NBA franchise that should be good every single season. And they have been a complete disaster. They have lost, they had a stretch of 28 straight games that they lost from last season into this season. And you know what? Last year, they had a 26-game losing streak. And they had lost the first 17 games of last season's. I mean, this is not a one-time thing. This isn't just this year. It's been over and over and over again. They had a 1-20 record going into Monday night's game against San Antonio. And San Antonio basically beat them without playing any of their starters. The NBA needs to step in and needs to do something. Colangelo is a guy that I think can step in there and move some things around and get them on the right track. But I'm telling you right now, If the 76ers really want to fix that franchise, can I tell you what they should do? They should take a blank check out to Golden State and ask Jerry West, how much will it take to get you here? Because Jerry West will not only fix them and have them respectable, he will have them contending for titles. Think of what Jerry West has done. We obviously know what he did with the Lakers. We know how he rebuilt the Memphis Grizzlies. And now, don't forget that Jerry West is the man that has rebuilt Golden State and has Golden State the best team in the NBA. That is what the 76ers should have done. I think Colangelo is a good move. You really wanted to rebuild this thing? Really want to do it right? Should have went and got Jerry West. Speaking of the Golden State Warriors, they are off to just an insane, insane start. They win their 27th game last night. Beat the Indiana Pacers 131-123. Klay Thompson, though, finished with 39 points and did turn his ankle. And I kind of want to keep an eye on what that, you know, the one thing with Golden State that we haven't seen is we haven't seen them have to overcome, you know, too much in the way of injuries. We haven't had to see them overcome, you know, guys missing from the lineup too much. We know Andrew Bogut is flaky at best, but Golden State, they're going to have to overcome some things. And here's the other thing I want to talk about just briefly with Golden State. And we haven't discussed the NBA in too much detail. The Warriors are now 23-0. They have now won 27 games in a row going back to last season. But the one thing that I want you to keep in mind is that the Golden State Warriors, and I like what they're doing. I'm not slagging on the Warriors. I'm not dogging on the Warriors. What they're doing is absolutely incredible. But when I look at the teams that they're beating, they're not beating the big dogs just yet. They've beat the Clippers. Okay, we know the Clippers have issues. They've beat Memphis. But other than that, on the West side, they haven't beaten anybody. And they haven't played some of the big-time teams. We haven't seen them play the San Antonios. They don't until the end of January. We haven't even seen them play teams as good as like, a Dallas or, you know, some of those other teams that are out there, even, you know, Phoenix and some of those teams. And I'm not saying those are world beaters, but I want to see Golden State get tested a little more than what they've had so far. Because right now, hey, they're beating anybody in front of them. And it's kind of like last season where you look at it and say, hey, they're beating all the big dogs. They haven't beaten Oklahoma City yet. They haven't beaten Dallas yet. They haven't played the Spurs yet. So I still want to see when it gets into the heat of the Western Conference, and see what Golden State does then. They're on an amazing run. See what they do with Klay Thompson out. He may miss a game or two. They're on a long road trip right now, and we'll see if Golden State can finish that out. 23 games in a row to start the season. It's pretty incredible what they have done. Shifting over to the world of baseball, and yes, I'm going to talk just a tiny bit of baseball. Arizona Diamondbacks are kind of getting better. And I can't hardly believe that, I know. But, you know, they went and signed Zach Greinke away from the Dodgers. And now they have acquired Shelby Miller, another all-star pitcher that's going to go into that rotation. I can't believe I'm saying this, but the Arizona Diamondbacks are kind of putting some things together. And what's interesting about this is that we keep hearing these free agents that are out there. And you saw Boston go get Price. You see, the Diamondbacks go get Greinke. You see a couple of these guys sign. You know who's not getting any of these people to sign with them yet? The Los Angeles Dodgers. They're kind of missing the boat on some of these free agents. I know that they had two really good pitchers last year and it didn't really help. So I realize they have to redo, kind of the way they're built. They don't have any bats in their lineup. But right now, Arizona is kind of quietly sneaking up and I don't know. They're going to at least be a team to watch as we get into spring training and as we head into the season. Kind of keep an eye on them. Hey, we've got a lot to get to, so we need to jump in. Joining us right now, friend of the show, John from the Inland Empire in lovely Southern California. John, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate you being here.
Hey, how's it going there, Daily Dose? How you doing, Clint?
It's going well. You know, we're doing our one-year anniversary show here. I appreciate you stopping by. We've got to jump over to college football right now. You know, the college football playoff has been named in the Orange Bowl. We've got number one Clemson versus number four Oklahoma. In the Cotton Bowl, we've got number two Alabama versus number three Michigan State. Saturday was great. I sat there and I watched football all day. I watched every single game that came on. The Michigan State game, when they go on that 11-minute drive against Iowa, it wasn't, I don't know if it's pretty football, but it was really, really fun to watch.
Oh, yeah, man. I watched the Stanford-USC, Alabama-Florida. Did I say Alabama-Florida? I'm sorry. That wasn't a pretty one.
That was pretty for like a quarter.
Yeah, but the Stanford-USC, that was a hell of a... Watching Christian McCaffrey just go out there and just run rampant all over SC was just amazing. The kid's just amazing.
He is, and there's so many different ways that he can hurt you. It's funny because he's not a big kid. He's not a kid that you look at him and you go, well, he has this crazy track sprinter speed. He just is so elusive and so quick in so many different ways he can beat you.
Well, I mean, you look at him, and he's a power back, okay? He gets a lot of short yardage plays, okay? And then he's the kid that comes and catches passes out of the flat and burns by your DBs. I mean, it's amazing what the kid could do.
And don't forget where he's from.
Oh, yeah.
He's from Colorado. Keep that in mind. Just keep that in mind. Hey, did the ACC refs make sure that Clemson would get in when they called North Carolina for that onside? That they called them for offsides on the onside kick. Carolina recovers the onside kick, and then they called them offsides. We look at the replay. There's nobody offsides. There's nobody within two yards of being offsides. Did the ACC refs just do another ACC job here?
Well, you know what? I think refs all together this year are teaming up to ruin pretty much every game they can, from the NFL to the NBA to college football.
It's tough, and I know they have a tough job. Can you at least call the stuff that it actually exists and not just make up phantom things? So let me ask you this, John: did the playoff committee get it right? I mean, there were no upsets really, so it kind of fell into their laps. But did they get it right? Did they get the right teams in this Final Four?
I think they did. You know, Oklahoma's really come on strong. They played great this year. You got Clemson, and Clemson just has so many weapons. I mean, you got Scott Kane, Peak in the passing game. You got Gallman and Watson running the ball. And Watson this year is having a really great year. Not quite a Baker Mayfield year, but he's having a great year. And as far as Michigan State and Alabama, I think that was a natural pick right there. Both those teams are tough defensively. There are going to be some games, man. There are definitely going to be some solid games going on.
You know, my only problem, I think, honestly, is that it seemed like they matched similar teams with similar teams. You got Clemson and Oklahoma. They're both kind of these high-powered offenses. It's not that they don't play defense, but they've got these high-powered offenses. They've got these quarterbacks that can throw it all over the place and do a lot of stuff. Same kind of team. On the other side, you've got Bama versus Michigan State. Yes, Bama can score, but let's be honest. It's all about that defense. It's all about that toughness. I kind of wish they maybe had interchanged these two so we would see some different matchups, because good fights are about, you know, the matchup. They're about what kind of matchup it is. I guess maybe that's my only problem with it, but I think they got the right four teams at least. The only problem I still have is that we have a team in this Final Four that lost to Texas. But I mean, what can you do? I guess what can you do about that?
Well, you know what, the Texas, you know, it was Charlie Strong's last stand, and I really think that next year Texas is going to turn it around. They're going to get around the corner. He's going to get his recruiting class in, and they're going to be a much better team next year than they are this year. I mean, this year he's playing with kids that he's cut, you know, walk-ons and, you know, last-minute transfers. So this was a difficult year for Texas.
And he's a good coach. I think he gets that going. Here's a question for you. Is there any chance, talking about coaches, is there any chance, think of these three guys, with Ohio State and Urban Meyer, Alabama and Nick Saban, Notre Dame and Brian Kelly, does any one of these three coaches make the jump to the NFL?
No.
Nobody does?
No.
I think somebody comes. Well, I've heard Cleveland is offering $10 million to talk to Urban Meyer. I mean, $10 million just to listen to the Browns. Now, that, granted, you're probably a little bit underpaid to listen to that franchise, but $10 million, I got to think someone's going to make a run at Meyer. Someone's going to make a run at Kelly.
You know what, though? At the end of the day, all these coaches are going to look at that roster and pass.
Well, the roster is horrible. But at the college level, I mean, they talked about this, you know, this last year. Ohio State goes to the championship game. They're not expected to get there. They end up playing all the way through. In the championship game, they win it. It's over. And Urban Meyer, after the game, they're going, you know, they're up on the podium. They're at the stand. They're talking about getting the trophy. And he tells one of his assistants, "Coach, I got to go downstairs and call this recruit. I told him I'd call him if we won." You don't even get to enjoy your championship there. I mean, the college game, you are recruiting 365. It is just constant for those guys.
Well, you know, looking at that, and you know, with Meyer, and I really think that the Cleveland Browns could possibly make a bowl game next year if they play college.
It's possible. It's possible.
I think maybe the Royal Purple Bowl, they can get in over there. Maybe
the Weed Eater Bowl.
You know, I think anything above the poinsettia bowl is just too much for them. But definitely those lower five bowls, they could probably get in on that one.
Okay, speaking of coaches, and I got to ask you, you're in Southern California. Former Southern California coach Steve Sarkisian is suing USC for wrongful termination. He's suing. The number named in the suit is $12.6 million, but his lawyer says that he is seeking $30-plus million because USC fired him without accommodating his disability that he has because of his alcoholism. First off, this isn't going anywhere, right? We haven't reached that point in America where they're going to actually listen to this garbage, right?
You know, I'd love to agree with you, but you know what? It remains to be seen. I think we're still trying to put that line in the dirt that we're not going to cross, and it keeps getting further and further and further away. This is definitely going to be heard. It's going to be heard only because he's playing the disability card. I mean,
how drunk was he when he filed this suit?
I don't. Probably as drunk as he was on the at the pep rally.
Well, sure.
But at the same time, I mean, you and I, if we go to work and we're drinking on the job, we're going to get fired. It's done.
Oh, it's done. And there's no question. There's no, I'm going to sue. There's no nothing. You came to work drunk. You get fired.
Yeah. Well, I think that what's going to end up happening also is that USC is going to throw the card out there that he was working with minors, you know,
sure.
And endangering them, and they had to make a decision based on that. So it's going to go tick for tat for a while, but I'm pretty sure he's going to get something out of it. I mean, he's still getting paid from Washington, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he is. You know what's interesting to me about this, and honestly, all kidding aside, schools might overlook the fact that he had this alcohol problem. They might overlook that and say, hey, we need an offensive coordinator. We need a guy that can come in. He's proved himself that he's gotten, you know, his life cleaned up and he's gotten some of those things taken. You know what schools aren't going to overlook? They're not going to overlook the fact that you sued the university. He's going to be working. I mean, that was his last job, I think.
Well, that, and he self-proclaimed himself clean, like in, was it 8 weeks, 10 weeks?
Easy. If everything was suddenly just fine. Because remember, he was originally talking about he was going to go into rehab and still be coaching and still be, you know, keeping his job and all. Man, it is a wild and crazy world that we are living in these days. I don't understand that.
Well, you know what, Clint? He probably completed the 10-step program, the online version.
The online version, yes.
Is what he probably did.
He did the online version of AA. That's like AAA. I like that. You know, the Heisman candidates were announced this week. I got a little bit of a problem with the Heisman candidates. I'll be honest. First Heisman candidate, they named three of them. Alabama running back Derrick Henry. And Derrick Henry is a huge guy. I watched him up close a little bit more in that Florida game. You don't realize how big of a guy he is. He doesn't seem to wear down. He seems to get stronger as the game goes. Henry has, you know, like, I don't know, almost 2,000 yards. He has 23 touchdowns. He's had an amazing, amazing season. Stanford running back Christian McCaffrey, we talked about him just a little bit earlier. Dude broke Barry Sanders' all-purpose yardage record. That's pretty elite company right there. You know, 3,500 yards from scrimmage. Absolutely amazing season that Christian McCaffrey has had. And then Clemson quarterback Deshaun Watson had 800 yards rushing and 3,500 yards passing. But here's my problem. Why do we only invite three guys? Are they that stingy with the bill, with the hotel bill and stuff? They couldn't like bring out five. There's a couple other guys I'd like to see.
I mean, you got Baker Mayfield. You got
I would love to see Baker Mayfield. I think Baker Mayfield might even be deserving of winning the award, not just getting invited. I think he might actually deserve to win it. I would have liked to see Navy quarterback Keenan Reynolds. He breaks the record for most touchdowns. Why can't you bring a couple more guys? NCAA just doesn't get it.
You know, too, is what I don't understand is, like, Watson is solid. I mean, he's a solid quarterback.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got Gallman, he's got Scott, he's got Kane. He's got some serious weapons in that offense.
Yeah, he does. And I think what we need to do with the Heisman, because, the Heisman is like the one award that we actually, talk about. We actually have a discussion about that people actually kind of pay attention to. Granted, we're not going to watch it on the night of it, but you'll actually pay attention and see who won it. But I think we kind of need to clarify what this award is. I don't know what it is. Is it for the best player? Is it for the MVP? Is it for the best player on the best team? I don't know. I don't know what the award actually is. I know what they say, but I don't know if I quite get it.
Yeah, you know what? It's got to be the best player, okay, at the position. You know, it's got to be MVP also. It's got to be a player that a team cannot do without. You know, Derrick Henry is carrying Alabama on his shoulders. You know, granted, they got a solid defense, but he's carrying them offensively.
Well, yeah. You know? And I look at some of these guys and I say, if you removed this player, what would their team look like? And that's where I look at a guy like Baker Mayfield and say, yeah, he's deserving of being at least in the voting, at least being invited to New York.
And you know what? And Christian McCaffrey, you know, he got in basically with the last seven games of the season. You know, he didn't start off very strong, and he came on strong after that UCLA game.
Well, and what hurt him is that David Shaw wouldn't give him the ball at the beginning of the year. He wasn't using him the way he is now. He wasn't giving him the ball, down in goal line situations. I think he was looking at him more as a scat back. He found out that Christian McCaffrey can actually get it done down in short yardage situations.
Well, they got Barry Sanders Jr. They got some other running backs on that team, but really they ride McCaffrey. You look at him, all game long. Okay, who's making the plays? He's making the plays
every time. If you had a vote, you have a Heisman vote. I'm going to give you a Heisman vote. You've got one vote. Who's getting your vote for the Heisman this year?
Man, I'm going to have to go with McCaffrey. I'm going to have to go with McCaffrey.
Yeah. You know,
just for what he does offensively, he catches the ball. He runs the ball. You know, he's the short yardage guy. You know what I mean? He's the second and eight kind of guy. He's the total package.
Yeah, and you know what? And you know my feeling. I'm not going to vote for California anything, but I absolutely agree with you. I think Christian McCaffrey is the guy. I think he's the guy most valuable to his team. I think he's the guy that we can look at historically and say, what an amazing year he had, knocking off a record that was, 25 years old with Barry Sanders' record. I'm telling you right now, though, Derrick Henry's going to win this, and I'll tell you why. Because most of the South and most of the East, aside from a few voters in South Carolina, they're going to vote for Henry. And you're going to get the Western votes. A few of them will even vote for Derrick Henry back at Alabama. Some of the Western guys will. But I'll promise you this. When you look at the votes, when they start tallying up those votes, watch. You won't see a single East Coast person vote for McCaffrey. None of them will. They'll all either vote for Watson or they'll vote for Henry. It won't even be close. No one will vote for McCaffrey except for West Coast guys. The problem is they don't see McCaffrey. They don't stay up late enough.
Yeah, and that's the problem with the Heisman voting.
Yeah, the games are too late. SEC is king, back on that side of the country. And I understand it. I get it. But Christian McCaffrey, to me, I don't know. He looks like the Heisman winner to me. He looks like the guy that has done the most for his team and done the most to carry his team every single week.
I have to agree with you there. And Derrick Henry's had some bad games this year. I mean, he's had some pretty bad games, but where he's only had 60 yards, 80 yards rushing. Whereas McCaffrey, he had the slow start, but man, he caught fire after the UCLA game and just he hasn't stopped.
Well, and once they started feeding him the ball, he's taken over. And the other side of it is Henry, let's be honest, if he goes for 30, 40 yards, that defense is still going to get them the win anyways, so it's not going to make any difference. McCaffrey has to be good. If he's not good, Stanford's not even in the ball game. Let's jump over to the NFL, because I want to talk some NFL with you while we have you here. Biggest news this past week, and I know this is really, really big to John in particular. Biggest news, Super Bowl 50 is this season. I mean, this is a huge, huge Super Bowl. Super Bowl 50. And they announced this past week the halftime show is going to be Coldplay. John, what is your favorite Coldplay song?
You know what? I don't have one, actually, Clint. You know, I Googled it, and I tried to find something, and you know, I still don't like any of the songs.
Right. And they said Coldplay, and I, who? Was Up With People not available? I don't know if I would rather have, I think I would rather have the hologram of Michael Jackson or something. Coldplay for Super Bowl 50? That's who we get?
Yeah, you know what? The NFL is losing touch with the audience, man. They really are.
Well, you know, you look at, and I'm not trying to necessarily compare the two, but when you look at like NBA All-Star Weekend and that kind of stuff, and they bring out the artists that they bring and that kind of thing, it's a different feel from what the NFL is doing, rolling out Coldplay. Just could you be more disconnected from your audience? I mean, if you're trying to garner, I guess, that youth, it don't have to be young people, people that aren't over 40. Coldplay? Really? I'm disappointed you didn't have your favorite Coldplay song. Let's move forward. The playoff races are starting to take shape. And, you know, we only got four games left in this season. If you look at the NFC, and I want you, I'm going to read these off to you, John. I just want you to tell me if any of these teams stand out to you. If the season were to end today in the NFC, you would have the number 6 Seahawks against the number 3 Packers in one of the wild card games. You would have the number 5 Vikings against the, bizarrely, the number 4 Redskins right now. And then winners would go on and face Panthers and Arizona, who are the top 1 and 2 seeds. Anything over on the NFC stand out to you? Any of those teams stand out to you at all?
Well, I mean, nothing stands out. There are a few that stand down. I mean, you got the Redskins, you got the Giants and the Eagles all fighting for NFC East, and they are all horrible. They are not playoff teams.
Well, I wanted to talk about that just a little bit, because then you have Dallas. They win that game last night against the Redskins, and that just or Monday night, I guess, against the Redskins. And that game, seriously, I hesitate to use the word abomination, but I feel like it probably is fitting here. You have the Cowboys. They're just one game back from the rest of these horrible teams.
Yeah, you know what? I watched a little bit of that, and I heard that there was a class action lawsuit that people were filing to get their life back. You know,
yes,
that they missed while they were watching that abomination.
Yes, because they lost like 3.5 hours of their life. And you know what's funny? Is I'm looking at the Cowboys, and I'm you know, they're celebrating last night, and they got the win, and they're just a game back. I mean, they're sitting at, what, 4-8 or some horrible thing? But think about their schedule for a second, because I know that Cowboy fans are kind of excited and saying, hey, we're still in this. We're only a game back, and it's true. But tell me where their win comes. They are at Packers, home against the Jets, home against the Bills, and then home against the Redskins. Now, they might win one of those. But with Matt Castle, you're not winning any more than that.
No. They're horrible. They're horrible defensively. They're horrible on both sides of the ball. You know, I see them every week, and it's hard. It's hard for me to put any money on them, no matter who they're playing.
Well, and it's funny, because I'm watching that, and I'm hearing Cowboy fans. Here's the good thing about Cowboy fans, and if you're a Cowboy fan, don't listen right here. Cowboy fans aren't very smart. So they like get tricked into getting excited, and they're like, "We're still going to make the playoffs." No, you're not. But we won't tell them that. We'll let them figure that out later. You know, the Seattle Seahawks, to me, they're kind of starting to look scary again.
Well, I mean, you get the two teams that you have in the NFL, in the AFC and the NFC, that are the kind of teams that, like, once they get in the playoffs, they're a totally different team. I'll tell you, in the NFC, the Seahawks are on fire right now. You know, Wilson is on fire.
He's not
running the ball that well, but offensively they're clicking, and defensively, man, they shut down the Vikings.
And Rawls runs so hard, he is totally making Marshawn Lynch look completely replaceable.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And then on the AFC side, you know, you got a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, who they're going to get healthy here pretty soon. Okay, and when they do, they're going to be dangerous. You know, they're already a dangerous team right now, but you know, if they get in, I wouldn't want to face them.
I wouldn't either. And let's talk a little bit about the AFC, because over on the AFC, you have the Bengals at the 1 and the Broncos are at the 2 right now. If the season were to end again today, You would have Jets versus Patriots in one of those games to play the Bengals, and you would have Chiefs versus Colts to play the Broncos. But the Steelers are sitting there back at the seventh spot, and it kind of feels like they could easily play their way in. That's an offense that I don't want to see. And by the way, we haven't talked about this, but the Antonio Brown celebration of where he mounts the goalpost might have been my favorite touchdown celebration of all time. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, you know what? The mount is going to be the new thing coming out. I think dabbing is working its way out. I mean, you know.
Oh, it's old.
It was great while it lasted, but you know, the full field goal mount is going to be the way to go now.
That was so awesome. And the lady standing behind the post, and he like kind of, I think he accidentally grabbed her, and that's what kept him from staying on it. But that was so epic to see her just jump and take. I can't believe he did it. I was watching that and I couldn't stop laughing. That is seriously one of the best end zone celebrations I've ever seen. Steelers are a team over there on the AFC side that scares me. I still think, and I still think at least until they get into the playoffs, I think the Chiefs are a little bit scary because they're running the football, they don't turn it over, and they play pretty good defense. I think the Chiefs are at least in that.
Yeah, and I think everyone knows to expect from the Colts and Texans. I mean, just them sending a team into the playoffs is ridiculous. I think the winner of that division should have to play in against either the Redskins, Giants, or the winner of the NFC East.
Well, sure.
Get in.
Okay, I'm gonna give you some coaches. I'm gonna give you some situations. I'm gonna give you some coaches, and you tell me whether or not they're gonna get fired. Okay, I've got a few coaches here. I want you. You are the president. You get to make the call. Do they get fired or not? Miami with Dan Campbell. Dan Campbell came in for a fired Joe Philbin. It worked for a while, but they clearly have underachieved. Do the Miami Dolphins? They're sitting at 5-7. Do they go get a new head coach or do they keep Dan Campbell?
They get a new head coach. They spent enough money on that roster. Okay, they should be performing better than they are. And I'm pretty sure that they're going to get a new coach.
Yeah, I would think so. Cleveland. Cleveland has Mike Pettin. The Browns are a complete disaster and a mess. Mike Pettin says he's going to start Johnny Manziel again. Browns are 2-10. He's gone, isn't he?
Wait, Manziel starting again?
That's what they say. They say that they're going to plug him back in. Austin Davis was horrible this last week. Josh McCown's out with the collarbone. I think they want to punish him for what he did, you know, during the bye week. I think they're going to be like, dude, you got to play. You don't have a choice.
Well, don't forget, you still have a Friday night party night and a Saturday night before Monday.
It's risky. It's risky business.
So it's risky. Honestly, I think he comes back because I think the majority of their problems are front office. The front office really screwed him over.
Well, that whole franchise is a complete disaster. Ravens with John Harbaugh. It's a lot of injuries, but the Ravens are 4-8. Would they get rid of John Harbaugh?
No, he's coming back.
How about the Tennessee Titans? They're sitting at 3-9. They already fired Ken Wisenhunt. They've got Mike Mularkey. Do they keep Mularkey and try to go with that, or do they go try to find somebody new?
I think they'll go with Mularkey one more year. I think they're going to give him a shot next year for the full season and kind of see how he does. You got a young quarterback. You got Marcus Mariota back there, and he's really come a long way. I mean, he's looking pretty solid. And I think they've lost a lot of close games this year.
Yeah, they have.
Well, so I think he comes back.
This one's a little closer to home, a little bit for you. The San Diego Chargers with Mike McCoy. Chargers are an absolute dumpster fire. They're sitting at 3-9. Looks like they could be a little closer to you next year in L.A. Does Mike McCoy get back?
That team is horrible. They're gone.
And they have talent. I don't understand that.
Yeah, he's gone. I mean, on both sides of the ball, they're terrible. Their offense is terrible. Their defense is terrible. He just isn't the guy to run that team. You know, and between him and I don't know who's worse, him or Jim with the 49ers, but both those guys are absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, Tomasulo's had a rough year, and he's not working with a whole lot either. Let's go rapid fire in the NFC East. Chip Kelly, stay or go?
Stay.
They keep Chip. I agree with you. I think Kelly will be back one more season. I think that's probably it. Jason Garrett with the Cowboys, stay or go?
Stay.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Well, you know what? I honestly think it is with Jason Garrett. I think it honestly is that Jerry Jones has found somebody who will listen to him and will actually kind of coddle the old geezer and be like, "Oh yeah, Jerry, you really are smart." I think because of that, he can't bring in a guy with an opinion. He has to have a guy like Jason Garrett that'll just listen to him whenever he wants to.
Yeah, but you know what, Clint? Jerry Jones never has a problem coddling. I mean, you've seen the pictures. I don't see him really needing Jason Garrett for that. I think Jason Garrett really runs a decent ship. I think his offensive coordinator will be gone first before he is.
But don't you think that Jerry Jones probably goes down to the locker room and like tells Jason Garrett some plays to run, and Jason's like, "Oh, okay, yeah, that sounds like a really good idea." Pfft, moron. I just get the feeling that's what he does. He like appeases him. Giants. Did the Giants fire Tom Coughlin? He's won 2 Super Bowls, but they 5-7, and they've lost a lot of games in the last 2 minutes.
They've lost a lot of close games, but Tom Coughlin is, what, 90? I mean, at some point, the game passes you by, and I think it has passed him by.
Is he that young? I didn't realize he was that young. The Washington racial slurs are sitting at 5-7 with Jay Gruden. It seems like management and Gruden have kind of had some differing opinions. It makes me wonder what they're going to do back there with him. Management seems like they really wanted RG3. He obviously didn't. He wanted Kirk Cousins. Does he stick around in Washington?
No. No, I think he's gone. I think the rift with RG3 was apparent, and I think management really supported him. Supported RG3 throughout the entire his entire career, and never wanted to see him benched. He was going to be their franchise player, and I think with Jay Gruden going with Cousins, I think he kind of walked the wrong way with management.
Yeah, I think he did. You know what? The team I'm starting to wonder about is the Detroit Lions. They're like, they show some flashes of life. They have talent, but Jim Caldwell has had this team with talent. They're sitting at 4-8. They should have been a playoff contender. I don't know if management will get impatient with Caldwell or not.
Well, you know, offensively, they're mediocre. I mean, you got Megatron, and they got to let him go. They got to free him and let him go to a team that's going to compete, because that guy is a stud. That guy, he works hard in the off season. He comes out every season and performs. Defensively, they lost some key players last year, you know, so they're going to put some points. But offensively, they really look out of sync.
At what point do you have to pull the plug on Matt Stafford and say he's not the guy? I mean, it's not, we think of Matt Stafford as being this young quarterback. He's been in the league like 6 or 7 years now.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you who their backup is, you know.
It's Eric Hipple. It's Eric Hipple, I think.
Well, I mean, you're going to have to draft somebody before you pull the plug.
Yeah. I've heard talk that the Saints not only could get rid of Sean Payton, that they could look to trade Sean Payton, possibly to someone like Miami. I think that could happen. Last one I'm going to ask you about. St. Louis Rams and Jeff Fisher. That team was kind of a dark horse candidate. Maybe they could scrape their way into the playoffs. It seems like Fisher's teams always, every year, are right around 7-9, 8-8. This year, they're sitting at 4-8. That seems like a pipe dream to even get that high this year. They have talent.
Well, you know, at 7-9, they're comfortable with that. It just seems like
right.
That's where the St. Louis Rams or Los Angeles Rams.
Yes, they're going to be Los Angeles.
Okay, that just seems like that's their comfort zone. You know, 7-9, we're good. You know, 8-8, that's fantastic. You know, they're really not looking to get any higher than that.
Yeah, you're probably right. Wow, we got a lot of guys staying that I didn't think they were going to stay. I thought we might cut some more. Hey, this week, we've got a couple games that I want to talk with John real quick about and get his opinion on a couple of these. We actually have, and I can't believe I'm saying this, we actually have a good game on Thursday night. I can't believe I'm saying it. The 8-4 Vikings go to the 10-2 Cardinals. That's a pretty decent game. Vikings are struggling a little bit offensively. It almost seemed like Teddy Bridgewater was more comfortable last year when he was having to throw all the time because he didn't have Adrian Peterson. It seems like he's kind of trying to figure out some things the second half of the season. Guys are getting a better scout on him or something. How do you see Vikings and Cardinals going on Thursday night?
You know what? The Vikings are really one-dimensional. I mean, they're not passing the ball. They're passing the ball terribly. And if Peterson's not running for, you know, 125, 150 yards, they really don't do anything. I mean, last week they got their butts handed to them by the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Peterson had 8 carries.
No, you got to feed the big man.
You know, and then on top of that, they had 10 drives. I mean, they had 9 first downs. 10 drives with 9 first downs.
Unreal. And you know, they started off the offense started off so good. I still like Bridgewater. It seems like he's just kind of hit that sophomore slump, and it's not looking good. Meanwhile, the Cardinals are quietly just winning and winning and winning every single week.
Oh, man, and looking at the Cardinals, man, they are stacked. Defensively, offensively and defensively.
Yeah.
They can go 6 deep with their wide receivers.
Yeah, they can. They're loaded, and Carson Palmer has a ton of targets. He's got good help in the backfield, and Carson Palmer is playing really, really well for his age.
Yeah, and you saw the Cards last year. They went, what, four deep into the quarterback spot?
Yes.
So I mean, he's not even that big of a difference in the offense, you know. Yeah, they're just solid. They're solid all the way around. I just see them running through the Vikings.
You're going Cardinals. I would go Cardinals as well on that one. Team we talked about earlier, and a team that I think is one of the most dangerous teams in the NFL, not just in the AFC, the 7-5 Pittsburgh Steelers go to the 10-2 Cincinnati Bengals. Bengals right now are the top seed in the AFC. Steelers could go in there and beat them real easy, though. I could see that happening. Who do you got in Steelers at Bengals?
You know, I got the Steelers, man. I think Antonio Brown is having a big season, but the rebirth of D'Angelo Williams, man, is really what's carrying them, man. I mean, they're running the ball really well.
Yeah, they are. And to lose Le'Veon Bell the way they did and not even miss a beat, that's the crazy thing to me, is just how they haven't missed it. And those wide receivers are really, really good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, he and see, the thing is with Big Ben, I know he's had his problems in the past, but the guy is going to be out there if he can be out there. I mean, he'll roll his ankle, you know what I mean? He'll strain his shoulder, but he's going to be out there if he can be out there.
He's a tough guy.
That's a good thing to have in the locker room.
Yeah, it is. I am going to shock. I'm going to go Cincinnati on this game. I'm going to go Cincinnati, and I'm going to tell you why. Because I think Andy Dalton is so excited that Coldplay was picked for the Super Bowl. I think Andy Dalton finds a way to get a win. No, he doesn't have a soul, but he's going to have a win.
Oh, the Ginger Man, huh?
Yes.
With the Ginger Man?
Yes. All right, 10-2 Patriots. We've seen the Patriots struggle the last 2 weeks. They've got some flaws right now. They've got a lot of injuries. They've got a lot of guys out. They go to the 6-6 Texans, who we knew their defense was pretty decent. They've kind of found a little bit of offense with Brian Hoyer, though.
Yeah, you know what? They're actually doing pretty decent on both sides of the ball, but really they're not going to put up, you know, 35 points, you know, or anything in the 30s, and that's really what you need to put New England Patriots, put them away. And even this past week, I mean, you saw Brady come marching down, and they had a shot to win it. You know,
I thought they were going to still win it.
Oh yeah, I thought for sure there was going to be a holding penalty or something going on downfield.
Sure.
To put him in field goal range, but I really think New England's going to take him out.
You know, one thing I took away from this past weekend, and I watched a little bit of Carolina and that Carolina game against the Saints. For all the talk, and I'm not, I don't mean to disrespect the Patriots, but for all the talk about how few a weapons Tom Brady is working with, and he's working with the Brandon LaFells, and he's working with these backup tight ends and these backup, I'm watching Cam Newton. He works with worse than that every single week. His wide receivers are horrible. I don't know how Cam Newton is doing what he's doing in Carolina.
Well, you know, I heard this week that the NFL is going to allow Ted Ginn to carry paddles with him while he's running his routes, because apparently his hands aren't working.
Well, his hands aren't working. His hands are actually made of granite.
Yeah, I think Jim Abbott has better hands than Ginn.
It is so bad. Every week he drops two or three touchdowns. I don't know how Cam's doing what he's doing. I don't think he's getting nearly enough credit, because it's funny, because they're talking about the Patriots and Tom Brady doing with Brandon LaFell. That's who Cam Newton's been throwing to the last few years. He has no help on that team.
You're talking a wide open Ted Ginn.
Oh, it's brutal.
Wide open, okay, 70 yards downfield, okay, ball hits him in the chest and hits the ground.
Of all the weeks to wear the oven mitts instead of the wide receiver gloves, it doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, final game. Here's the big one, and you have some insight on this one. The 5-7 Raiders come to Denver to face the 10-2 Broncos. What is going on with the Raiders lately? They had such a good start. It seems like they are struggling as of late.
You know, really, the struggle is defensively. I mean, I know Carr had a couple picks the last game against the Chiefs to end it, but it was desperation time. You know, in desperation time, you're always going to make those mistakes, especially with a young quarterback. But really, defensively, we're giving up too many points. Too many points. I really think this game is going to be close. I think the Broncos are going to pull it out. But I know the last game came down to a field goal, and both teams struggled. I mean, both teams struggled offensively. I mean, it just seems like whenever they play each other, their defense really steps up. I know that game we had a tough time running the ball. Broncos had a tough time running the ball. But that was Peyton Manning, you know. Brock brings a little bit, you know, little different thing to the table.
Yeah, the offense looks a little bit different. You know, the Denver Broncos are averaging, I believe it's 160 yards a game now with Brock Osweiler, and it makes me wonder if it's, one, him being under center, two, the threat of him being able to roll out and hurt you in the passing game a little bit in a way that Peyton Manning can't do it.
Yeah, and with Peyton, I mean, if you watch the Raiders when they played the Broncos, they weren't sending anybody too deep. You know,
they were sitting on everything.
Yeah, they were sitting on everything. So I think we got to respect the arm, and you got to respect the feet, you know, when you have Brock behind center.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. The Denver Broncos actually cut, you know, they brought in Christian Ponder, and they cut him on Tuesday, and it makes me wonder if that, I don't quite know what they're doing. Does that mean Peyton's coming back? And if he is coming back, is he coming back as a backup? Is he coming back as the starter? They're playing so well, it just seems like it would be kind of crazy to tinker with that at all.
Yeah, you know what, and especially if, you know, you still got Brock out there, and if he gets hurt, you know, you don't want to put in a 70% Peyton Manning, you know.
Right.
And Ponder is a good backup. You know, he's a decent backup. He'll go out there and he'll run the offense. He may turn the ball over a few times, which, you know, he's notorious for throwing the ball away. But for the most part, in a Gary Kubiak offense, he would do all right.
Well, and I know that from my perspective, he held a clipboard. Like, I mean, it's hard to find guys that can really, really look good holding the clipboard. He looked great holding that thing.
Yeah, especially when they don't even use him anymore.
Right. He's sitting there with the iPad. He's got the hat on. I mean, he looked sharp over there on the sideline. He didn't ever, you know, get in a game or even, I don't even know if he took a snap in practice, but he looked good on the sideline.
Well, actually, I saw a side angle of him, and I think it was an Etch-A-Sketch.
You might be right.
A clipboard.
Well, hey. I appreciate you stopping by. You got in on the one-year anniversary on the Daily Dose. I really, really do appreciate you coming in and give us some insight on a couple different games, a couple different college games, a couple different pro games. I really appreciate you stopping by, John. You know you are welcome anytime.
Hey, thanks, Clint, man. Anytime, man. I really love it.
As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Always a popular segment here on the Daily Dose. Do you realize that Saturday we will be handing out the 2015 Heisman Award? And, you know, it's funny because, like I said earlier when we were talking with John, the Heisman needs to clarify exactly what it is. I know what they say it is. They say that the Heisman Award is awarded annually to the most outstanding player in college football, whose performance best exhibits the pursuit of excellence or whatever it is that they say. We know that that's not true. But they need to clarify exactly what it is because I can't quite figure it out. They say it's the most outstanding player. Is it the best player on the best team? Because I know for a fact that we don't always hand it to the best player. Is it purely just the greatest player? Because if that's the case, how do we continually hand it to the guy who's not the greatest player? Is it the MVP? I can't figure out, is it the MVP award? Because sometimes we kind of rate that into the equation too. Well, here, today on the Daily Dose Top 5, I want you to keep something in mind. And as we go into the Heisman vote on Saturday, I want you to keep this in mind. Sometimes it is actually better to be the runner-up. Sometimes it is actually better to not win the Heisman. Today on the Daily Dose, we are going to give you the Daily Dose Top 5 Heisman runner-ups. Number 5. In 1966, Florida quarterback Steve Spurrier won the award. The Florida Gators had gone 8-2. He threw for over 2,000 yards. He had 16 touchdowns. In fact, in a game that season against Auburn, Steve Spurrier is out on the field. They need a field goal to win it. They didn't have a great kicker. They didn't have a kicker that could kick it very long. I believe they needed a 47-yard field goal to win it. The kicker starts to run out. Spurrier sends him back off the field and says, I'll kick it myself. He kicks it and wins and beats Auburn. Now, Spurrier, we all know, went on to be a great coach, but as far as a player, he was kind of a career backup. He was drafted by the 49ers. He spent a number of years out there, but he never really got beyond being a backup. He was John Brody's backup for many, many, many years. Ended up going to Tampa Bay briefly, but Spurrier was never the guy in the NFL. But you know who came in number two that year? Was future Hall of Fame quarterback and leader of the only undefeated team in NFL history. This guy won 3 AFC championships. He won 2 Super Bowls. He was an All-Pro twice. Purdue quarterback Bob Greasy finished second. Now, who would you rather be? Would you rather be Steve Spurrier? Great college career. Okay, pro career. I mean, he was there. Or would you rather be Bob Greasy, who's in the Hall of Fame now? Sometimes it's better to be the runner-up. Number four on our list, in 2003, you know, Heisman voters, a lot of times we look at the team. And we're doing it this year. We're looking at teams like Alabama. We're looking at teams like Clemson. We're saying, well, best guy on best team. It must go to them. Heisman voters in 2003 looked at the best quarterback at the time at one of the top-ranked teams. And this, you know, Oklahoma quarterback Jason White, he threw for 3,700 yards. He had 40 touchdowns. When he left Oklahoma, he was the all-time leader in passing yards and in touchdowns. Phenomenal season by Jason White. But again, who would you rather be? Because finishing number two that season in 2003 was a wide receiver from Pitt who ended up going to 8 Pro Bowls with the Arizona Cardinals. Would you rather be Jason White or would you rather be Larry Fitzgerald? Because I'm going to take Fitzgerald's. I'm going to take the runner-up job. That sounds a little bit better to me than Jason White, who I don't know where he's at now, running a car dealership or something. I have no idea. Yeah, I'd rather be Larry Fitzgerald. Thanks. Let's move on to number three. Number three, in 1983, the Nebraska Cornhuskers were the big dog team. And you know, again, we look at the team like that. They're top ranked, and we say, hey, best player, best team. Running back Mike Rozier was their best player. Dude had 2,100 yards. He had 29 touchdowns. Now, that might not sound impressive today with the offensive numbers that guys put up. Here's something I want you to think about with Mike Rozier. He averaged 8 yards every time he touched the football. As a running back, not as a wide receiver, as a running back, 8 yards a pop. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. But there was a BYU quarterback that came in second that year. And the BYU quarterback had 4,000 yards passing, had 33 touchdowns. But that's just a system. Remember, BYU at the time, you know, they were running that system. They were firing the ball all over the place. It was totally different. It was that whack football. And I don't mean whack. I mean Western Athletic Conference football. They were firing the ball all over the place. So it's just a system thing. He really wasn't that good. He was just doing it at BYU. Well, maybe not. Because the guy that finished second that year, Steve Young, went on to have a pretty good pro career. I mean, he's in the Hall of Fame. He was a 7-time Pro Bowler. He was a 3-time All-Pro. And he was on 3 Super Bowl championship teams. I think I'd rather be Steve Young than Mike Rozier. And Rozier had a decent pro career. Yeah, I'd rather be Steve Young on that deal. Number two on our list. Same thing. Top team. Top player. In 1992, University of Miami had a 29-game win streak. And their quarterback had actually 23 of those wins himself. He had 3,000 yards. He had 19 touchdowns. Not great. Not anything that you look at. But again, best player, best team. Miami was undefeated. So they gave it to quarterback Gino Toretta. Because he was on Miami. He was the quarterback for the top-ranked team. And again, there's no way you should give it to anyone else, right? It's not really about being the best player, is it? Because we know that there's no way it should have gone to a running back from a Mountain West school with a 5-5 record. I think they ended up going 5-5-1. I think San Diego State that year had a tie. But this goes to the most outstanding player, right? And who would you rather give it to? Gino Toretta or Marshall Faulk, who went on to be a 7-time Pro Bowler, an NFL MVP in 2001, and a Super Bowl champion? Well, of course Toretta, right? Yeah, sometimes it's better to be the runner-up. When we're talking about the Heisman, and I want you to keep this in mind on Saturday, when we're talking about the Heisman, sometimes it is better to be the runner-up than to actually win the award. Number one on our list, I'm going to be honest, I feel a little bit bad about this one. I really do. Because in 1982, Georgia running back Herschel Walker was amazing. Over 1,600 yards, had 15 touchdowns, and the Bulldogs, who are known for, you know, not performing in big games, they went 12-0. They won the national championship. And, you know, when you look at Herschel Walker, you say, well, he had a decent career. I mean, he had a long career. We all remember he was with Minnesota. He went to Dallas in the big trade. He went to the Pro Bowl twice. I mean, Herschel Walker had a decent career. But you know, the problem is that the guys behind him that didn't win the award that year were just so much better. So much better. And it wasn't just the second place guy, because in 1982, third place went to a guy that went to the Pro Bowl six times. Four times he was the NFL rushing champion. And in 1983, SMU running back Eric Dickerson was the MVP of the NFL. Okay, so he finished third. Eric Dickerson finished third. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I mean, obviously, in the NFL, Eric Dickerson probably had a better career than Herschel Walker. Granted, at SMU, he was getting, you know, boatloads of money and free cars and all that. We won't worry about that stuff. But you know who finished second to Herschel Walker? A guy that might be one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Went to the Pro Bowl nine times. Went to the AFC and went to the Super Bowl five times. Won the Super Bowl twice and was elected into the Hall of Fame, finishing number two in 1982. Stanford quarterback John Elway. Who would you rather be? John Elway, Eric Dickerson, or Herschel Walker? Sometimes in the Heisman, it is better not to win. Hey, next week, a look at some of the best bowl games this season. You know, there's a million bowl games this year. In fact, there are so many bowl games this year and so many bad teams this year, they actually had to go against their own rules. The NCAA had to go against their own rules and take a few teams with losing records. What we'll do is we'll weed out those for you, and we'll go through and we'll give you, here's the bowl games that you're actually going to want to watch. I'll actually give you, here's when the game's on, here's a player you might want to watch, here's a game that might actually be good. We're going to weed through bowl season for you. We'll tell you which ones might actually be worth your time. Plus, got to talk a little bit about the NFL. You know, next week, there's only going to be three games left. We're getting down to it. The NBA, you know, we talked a little bit about Golden State earlier in the show today. There are, believe it or not, I know from the media, you would never know this. There are actually some teams in the NBA that are quietly putting together some pretty good seasons besides just the Golden State Warriors. I know, kind of a shocker. Plus, as usual, we will always have our Daily Dose Top 5. You do not want to miss that. Hey, if you get a chance, head over to iTunes, give us a quick rating, give us a review. That 5-star rating helps us so much, you know, within iTunes rankings. We would really, really appreciate if you could do that. Have to say thank you to John for coming on the show. Have to say thank you to all of you listeners. Like I said earlier, this is our one-year anniversary. Could not do any of this without you all listening. I appreciate you listening so, so, so much. It means a lot to me, and I hope that you are enjoying it every single week. Have to say thank you for the first year, and let's keep it going and let's make it bigger and better. As usual, I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I hope that you all have a great week and a great weekend. I will see you all next week, everybody.